Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, August 19, 2020. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from the shores of Lake George. Taylor, I had to move inland a little bit. You know, the breeze a little stronger today. I didn't want to have that too much sound. So I'm sure you're feeling sorry for me.
Wow, tough life you got going on over there. I appreciate you looking out for the audio quality, but thoughts and prayers to Buster Olney. That's tough.
I'm up on this massive deck we have looking southward over Lake George. Pretty cool. The Rays' Brendan McKay is going to have season-ending shoulder surgery. He's, of course, the two-way rookie who's been someone watched throughout baseball. He's going to have that surgery today. 24-year-old McKay tested positive for COVID-19 in early July and missed most of the club's preseason camp. He was cleared to resume activities July 31st and reported to the club's alternate site, but then experienced stiffness in his pitching shoulder and was shut down last week. The Cubs' Chris Bryan is out at least until Friday after getting an injection in his wrist. Indians manager Terry Francona, a friend of the show, is going to have a surgical procedure and he will miss the Pirates series. General manager Mike Chernoff said Francona will have a scheduled procedure to address a gastrointestinal issue. He also sat out 7 games August 3rd through 9th because of the ailment. They are hopeful that he'll be back in the dugout Friday night in Cleveland. The Braves' Nick Markakis, who had opted out of this season and opted back in, was put on the injured list over COVID-19 caution. The Braves don't know if he's infected, but he was exposed to someone who was, so they're just being careful. There was drama for the Twins against the Brewers last night. Kenta Maeda, who the Twins acquired from the Dodgers during the offseason, got through 8 no-hit innings. This is what happened next.
1-1 to Urias. Chopper to Arise. 8 no-hit innings.
Maeda will be 3 outs away from a no-hitter.
Kenta Maeda, 3 outs away from just the 6th no-hitter in Twins history.
Throwing 113 pitches along with his 12 strikeouts, a couple walks.
Here is Sogard, a strikeout and a ground out.
Can he do it for 3 more outs?
Liner to center, into center field. And Sogard breaks up the no-hitter.
And that Sogard hit was under 70 miles per hour in exit velocity, the softest hit ball against Maeda throughout the game, but it broke up the no-hitter in the ninth. The Brewers go on to tie the game, but the Twins would walk it off. The Mets beat the Marlins 8-3 with help from Amed Rosario.
2 balls and 1 strike. Vincent ready from the belt. His pitch. Rosario hits this one deep in the air toward left. Forget the walk when you can hit a dinger. Amed Rosario swats a home run to extend the Mets lead. For Rosario, it's his 2nd home run of the season, and it was a no-doubter, a 2-1 fastball up in the zone, and the Mets have taken a 4-2 lead here in the 7th.
That from WCBS. The Dodgers beat the Mariners 2-1, and Corey Seager got the game-winning hit.
Seager grounds it into right field for a base hit. Barnes rounding 3rd, and he will score with a head-first slide. And the Dodgers take a 2-1 lead.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570 Sports. The Oakland Athletics have been red hot, but they've been slowed down this week by the Diamondbacks' Cole Calhoun out of hand in that.
Swinging a high fly ball into pretty deep left center field. Back of the warning track, back of the wall, and you can touch them all, Cole Calhoun. 2 for 2 today. He's halfway to the cycle. That's his 7th home run of the season. The D-backs get that run right back, and it's 6-1 Arizona.
Greg Schulte, Arizona Sports, 98.7 FM. The Astros and the Rockies played in the 11th inning, and this happened.
With Tapia in left center and Blackman in right center, 0-1. And that is line past the drawn and infield and in the left. Coming in to score is Toro. And the Astros win it in a walk-off, 2-1 and 11. Miles Straw comes through. And the Astros have won 6 in a row.
Robert Ford at KBME 790 AM with that call. Tim Anderson of the White Sox went 4 for 5, including this.
It's big news in the Anderson household every time he hits a home run because they have a ritual at the Anderson household. When he hits a home run, it's spaghetti night for dinner. He gets a big plate of spaghetti. So he loves the home runs. Tim in the air, left field. It's time for a pasta party. Cook it up. Throw in some meatballs. 1-0 Sox.
for Jason Benetti doing play-by-play on the White Sox. Man, that's a story that comes together very quickly. Very cool that he did that. Now, today we're going to be talking to Boog Shambi and Paul Imbakides. Before we get to them, we have to mention another new piece of the ESPN radio lineup, Shanae and Golic Jr. Obviously, these two are stars in their own right, but I think this pairing is going to be very strong. I already like what I've heard. Shanae and Golic Jr. is on ESPN Radio from 4 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can also listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Shambi on Baseball Tonight.
Boog Shambi, the legend with whom I will renew an old feud today, ambush style. But before we get to that, Boog, what do they have you working on?
So tonight I have Braves and Nationals with Chipper Jones and Rick Sutcliffe. And Friday I have the Yankees and the Mets with Chipper Jones. So I'm looking forward to both those games.
So as you're doing prep, Chipper and Sut are just such great personalities. What's that like? I'm guessing you probably got about 1,000 text messages going back and forth.
I do. And just trying to find fun stuff. You know, as many little things that I can to generate fun and then serious conversation. And they're both not shy. I think that, one of the things with Chipper, this setting is hard. It's hard for all of us, but he's just not shy. If he thinks something, he's going to say it. And it's been fun so far. So I think we'll have a good time tonight.
Yeah, I remember some higher up at ESPN asked me, I want to say 6-7 years ago, who would be a good broadcaster? And I was like, you got to get Chipper Jones. He would be great. The only question I think we had at that time was whether or not he would be interested in doing that. But knew he would be great at it, just as Sut is as well. Yeah. So you saw yesterday the unwritten rules conversation exploded again. I'd like to think we started on the podcast yesterday, but... it went on and on with a talk after Fernando Tatis Jr. hit a home run on a 3-0 count with the Padres having a big lead over the Texas Rangers. During the course of the day yesterday, a couple suspensions of the Rangers, including manager Chris Woodward. My favorite thing, Boog, about yesterday was about how a couple of Hall of Famers chimed in. This one I was so happy about. Johnny Bench, the greatest catcher of all time, wrote on Twitter in support of Tatis Jr. He wrote, "So you take a pitch, now you're 3-1. Then the pitcher comes back with a great setup pitch, 3-2. Now you're ready to ground out into a double play. Everyone should hit 3-0. Grand slams are a huge stat." And I just thought that was so cool that he backed him up in that way. And this is someone who obviously played back in the old school days. And Reggie Jackson wrote, "Fernando Tatis, keep playing hard and playing great. It's a pleasure to watch you play. Love your success and the Padres rise to be a winner. Keep leading the way. It ain't easy to hit homers. Keep bringing energy you have to the game. We need players like you, an all-star." What'd you think about those?
Yeah, I was, I guess, a little surprised, but it's great. I can't imagine what it's like for people who are fans of other sports but aren't fans of baseball. And you're talking about a young star player, and my guess is that they're probably a little bit, like, to try and explain this one to an alien would be confusing. Like, what did he do wrong, I think, would be the issue when you're talking about, you know, competition, that type of thing. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know how I feel about it. I think the one component of it is you even had Buck Showalter saying you got to have, let the young guys play the way they're going to play. But I would maintain that, you know, not to get too in the moralizing sense, but yeah, that old mindset was wrong. It was incorrect. Like from the standpoint of all of those things, even if you're, you know, in that spot, like, you know, it's funny, the reverse isn't true. If the pitcher, you know, if the pitcher is up big, like, he's still trying to strike you out. It just doesn't, if you take the argument out all the way, you just defend the old style rules, you're just going to get boxed into a logic corner. You are. And because it's just kind of silly, and baseball just needs less of that. And it really needs less of that just in a general way to continue to capture younger fans.
So here was Keith Hernandez on SNY last night talking with Gary Cohn. And I don't think that Keith was wholly embracing the old school style in the way that we've seen some players embrace it. But I think he gave a good explanation about, you know, what, under the old school thinking, was going to happen in a situation like that. Give a listen to Keith Hernandez.
So, you guys, you played the game. You know the game has changed somewhat in those respects. What do we think?
Anybody knows, eighth inning, 7-run lead, you don't even need a take sign, Gary. You get your teammate behind you in the on-deck. You get your teammate behind you, get thrown at. Today's game, they don't like to hit people. You know, it would have gotten hit, and it would get your teammate upset. And I think for Tatis to say that he didn't look for the sign and wasn't aware, I think that he was. And I think it was, I'm purely speculating here, but it is this kind of a selfish act, and you're putting your teammate in the on-deck circle in jeopardy. So it's just, it's inexcusable.
So let me ask you this. Let me play devil's advocate. Why? Why should he not be swinging 3-0?
Because it's a 7-run lead in the eighth inning, and you don't pour it on. You just don't.
So is the other team supposed to promise not to try in the last inning? Because I remember the Mets blew a 6-run lead in the ninth inning last year. What's the cutoff? How do you? I mean, I understand taking a knee when it's 49-0 and you're going in with time running out, but it's always possible in baseball to put together a big inning. So how do you know when it's not acceptable?
When it's a big lead like that in the eighth inning, I personally would take. I wouldn't even dream of swinging 3-0. I would not do it. Yeah, and I wouldn't need. I would not need to look at the sign, even if I was given a hit sign.
The part there that I thought Gary was great in saying why is it wrong for Tatis Jr. to swing 3-0, Boog, but it's not wrong for the pitcher to react to that by throwing at the next hitter. Like, I don't get that in the old school thinking.
Well, there's two components to it. I mean, look, we're allowed to injure you for that is you know, to me is has never been acceptable and should not be. I mean, to me. And then I just think, again, you're talking about competition, and it just doesn't make sense. Baseball has a lot of these where the answer to the question is, why do we do it that way? Because that's the way we've always done it. And it's one of the, look, Keith was brainwashed to think that that's the acceptable way to do it. But if you parse it out, it's funny because, you know, in my Twitter feed, for whatever reason, a decent amount of Mets fans have voice, and they were all, it's a funny coincidence that you played from the Mets broadcast, because they were all bemoaning their bullpen the last couple of years, saying, 7-1 lead in the eighth, like, that's not so safe, man. So I just think from a competition standpoint, just let them play. Baseball needs less of that stuff. It just does. It needs less of that stuff.
Yeah, and it's professional baseball. Like, I get it. Like, if it's high school basketball, we talked about this yesterday, and one team is much better than the other, and yes, one team is up by 50 points, yeah, you no take doubt. Off the full court press. That's completely different.
No question.
This is professional baseball. They're all professionals, yeah, right? Yep. It's just a different context.
That's right.
Here was Joe Torre on the Michael Kay Show yesterday, 98.7 ESPN New York. I haven't heard this. I'm curious to see what Joe had to say.
Ball's teed up for you. Base is loaded. He's going to throw a ball, if he can throw a ball down the middle, just not to walk him with the bases loaded, lose him by, seven runs. You know, I'm not a fan of that. I think it's rubbing it in. You know, teams have blown leads. I mean, it wasn't like the old Army back when I played. You know, it was a five-run lead. You didn't steal a base late in the game, stuff like that. But, runs are scored at will anymore. And, you're talking to a guy who, when I was with the Cardinals managing back in, it was 94 or 95, I was winning 11-0 by the fifth inning. It was a tie score. So it's a mixed bag, but I'm still not comfortable with it.
Well, my response would be, hey, that professional pitcher out on the mound, how about doing something other than grooving a fastball right down the middle, Boog?
Yeah, and look, the other part that's funny is, if you search back, for as much as people like to talk about this, I found a guy did a research from Baseball Reference. They've had detailed pitch data available since 1988, and there have been 16 instances of a homer being hit, 3-0 count, 6 or greater run lead. And within that list, there are 25 All-Star appearances, 8 Silver Slugger Awards, 2 MVP awards, and a World Series MVP. I mean, great players who did it. So I don't – it's just a – I think the thing that's so funny is the people defending it, I don't even – they've just been taught for so long that it's the right thing to do. But from this – that's rubbing it in is – It's just, I don't know what to tell you on that one, because ultimately you're setting up a scenario where, like, nobody really knows except for just, it's when I see it, but it's, you're setting up this scenario where one guy's supposed to compete, but the other guy's not supposed to compete. Like, if he had thrown a 3-1 pitch, or if he had thrown a 3-0 pitch for a strike and then threw the 3-1 and hit it out, then everybody's fine. But the pitcher's trying. The pitcher's trying the entire time. You know, it's like when you used to see with a big lead, if a guy took a big swing in the old days, it happened when I've been broadcasting, and guys would get mad. Hey, don't take that big of a swing. Well, you're trying to strike me out, aren't you? I mean, that's the part that's like, it's crazy. So, and you're right, they're all getting paid. It's not like high school. It's not like college from the standpoint of, when you can get, a low level D1 team against a power five team, and the scales are really tipped in that regard. So,
all right, let's move on. Kenta Maeda last night flirted with a no hitter. That was a fun watch. It was very interesting too, for him to go out in the ninth inning with 113 pitches. That is very old school.
There's no question. In fact, I keep this book, with all these sort of quirky things in it. So how about this, Buster? In 2010, 50% of all major league starts, the starting pitcher went 100 or more pitches. Last year, it was 24%.
Wow.
So from 2010 to 2019, it's gone from 50% have gone 100 or more pitches to 24%. You just don't see it a ton. You just don't see it a ton. And even that one is a good example of, I'm not like, look, just in general, all of this stuff, baseball purports to be, hey, we're not about individual, we're about the team. Except let's get Kenemaya a no hitter because that'd be really cool. And I'm fine with that. But you can't, but you know what I'm saying? It was like then, you know, Edwin Jackson a few years back, and he's got a bazillion pitchers. I mean, don't tell me that the priority in that spot is winning the game. And I'm okay with that, but you just can't, like, I'm okay with trying to get Kenta Maeda the no hitter. Like, and I know Rocco Baldelli, I would hazard a guess, would be very new school in all of this. But I, you know what I'm saying? Like, putting Kenta Maeda on the mound last night, I don't think you're making the solid argument that that's giving you the best chance to win the game.
No, is in fact, as we saw the inning play out, right, and the way that that game played out. Yeah, I would agree with you.
And I am fine with it, and I am totally fine with it. But you just can't. Then you can't do those old school defending, you know, team guy. Like, I get it. Yeah, let's try and get Ken Amaya. It's special. It's cool. I get it. We're good. But the rest of it just kind of pains me at times.
So yesterday, Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic mentioned in a column that suggested there's a possibility that Xander Bogaerts could be traded before this year's trade deadline because in September he'll get full no-trade protection. And I got to tell you, when I read that, because, yeah, you can make an analytic argument that as the Red Sox are going through this rebuild, and we saw them over the weekend, my God, they're so far away and they're pitching, it's scary. And if you trade Bogaerts, you could theoretically get some people in return. I got to say this, if Chaim Bloom were to trade Xander Bogaerts this summer, he might as well just pack up his office and leave. Because I just don't think in the current mindset of Red Sox fans after the Mookie Betts trade, they would not accept that deal. And they're not going to wait 5 years to accept that deal. In fact, it's interesting, and Chaim is terrific at what he does. He demonstrated that in Tampa Bay. But I feel like that, you know, when you have a new general manager come in, there's a grace period, right? You know, they get a couple of years of mulligan, so to speak. I think with Chaim, because the first thing he had to do, and he knew this when he took over that job, was to trade Mookie Betts, between that and how bad this Red Sox team is, I think the clock's already ticking with him, on him, with Red Sox fans, the media, and maybe with the Red Sox ownership. You've seen through the years, they've been really impatient. And so if you trade Mookie Betts, you have a horrifically bad season. Your pitching staff, it might be the worst pitching in Red Sox history. If you back that up by trading Xander Bogaerts, I think you're accelerating your departure. What do you think?
I don't know if I agree with that or not, because I don't know the relationship I between ownership and Chaim Bloom. I just know that I respect Chaim Bloom. I think he's sharp. I think if they let him do his thing, he'll figure it out and make them good. I would actually go rewind to just this general idea. Now, Chaim Bloom's been, you know, in a place prior to Boston where, you know, they're pinching pennies, and I get it. But I would, like, in a broad sense, one of the things I would say is when you're scouting and developing, you want your players to turn into the best player in the league. And there should be a plan to keep that player. Like, my point is, if you're the Boston Sox, like, it's not as if you don't see it coming. Like, you should want Mookie Betts to turn into the best player. The Indians should want Francisco Lindor to turn into a Hall of Fame caliber player. and if we just signing, like, the best case scenario happened here. It turns into this thing, like, think about when you drafted the guy or signed the guy. The best case scenario happened. He turned into as great as pop. Like, you're doing it wrong if you're letting players of that magnitude and ilk get away. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, there's something about the way you're managing the rest of the finances. You're doing it wrong. Or there's also an argument to be made that the system needs to be tweaked. And I'm not, and I would concur with that in terms of that 6-year free agency in today's world, with as smart as the general managers are, that system works. Cause I don't think it does. I don't think guys are going to pay people consistently on what they had done. They're going to do it on what they will do. But it just, so, you know, as a mechanism to clear space to do stuff, I understand moving these guys, but so to me, like, you're the Boston Red Sox. You just won the World Series. Like, you knew what Mookie Betts was turning into. Like, he should still be wearing a Red Sox uniform. And for Lindor, it's the same deal. Like, he turned into what should be one of the best Indians players of all time. And relative to Bogarts, I'd also maintain this. I'm not sure everybody out there, I know people, but, like, does everybody realize what a beast he is?
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about best shortstops in the game offensively, like, he's better than Baez. He's better than Lindor. Offensively, he's like the only guy that sort of is Story. He's a monster. So, I know you asked a different question, and I took it in a different way. Look, the bottom line on how, is if they get good, he'll be fine. If they don't, he won't. Period.
Well, and you asked the question, or you know, you mentioned that you're not sure about the relationship between Haim and the Red Sox ownership, and I'd say history tells us that it doesn't really matter what the relationship is now. That can change quickly.
Right, you're right. That's right.
Theo,
right.
You know, he helped them win the World Series in 2004, ended 86 years of misery. And when he was out the door, they couldn't stand him, right? And that relationship was severed. And then Ben Cherington took over, and he got, you know, a farm system with guys like Mookie Betts. And then he got pushed to the side even after he won a World Series. They brought in Dave Dombrowski, who did exactly what ownership wanted, which was to go for it, you know, racking up a credit card bill, doing it,
right,
and
right.
They got rid of him. And so that's the thing. I think that, you know, Haim might be already on the clock because of how this year has played out. All right, last one I'm going to renew an old feud with you. So Mike Trout is off to a great start this year. And so yesterday I called a couple of Angels people and said, man, you know, he's killing the ball. He's hitting home runs at the highest rate of his career. You know, how do you think he's gotten better? Because he tends to get better. And what I got back was, nah, he's not really any different, but he's got Anthony Rendon batting behind him. He's got more lineup protection. He's getting more balls in the zone than ever before. So I went on FanGraphs and looked up these numbers, Boog. 2017 for Mike Trout, pitches in the zone, 43%. 2018, fewer, down to 42%. 2019, last year, a career low, 40%. This year, Anthony Rendon behind him, a career high, 48%. What say you?
I would say that's for, you know, is interesting evidence. I would say to you that we're 20 games into the season, and if
fair,
and you feel emboldened because it's a third of the way through the season. But if you tried this stuff on me in 162 games, you wouldn't have the stones to try this on me 20 games into a 162 game season. That's what I say to you.
Oh,
but the data on your side is good. That's good data. I like it.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. It is a small sample size, but when I went and looked at the numbers, I started laughing, of course, could think about our old debate.
Yeah, that's right.
About whether or not a line of protection matters. All right, Book, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Thanks, Buster. I'll talk to you, pal.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Why, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
Hembo, of course, is Paul Imbachiti. He's a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho in the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. We checked with Mike Greenberg, and he said that just that Hembo is a wild partier. Hembo, good to talk with you. I just ambushed Boog Shambi with the whole question of lineup protection and whether it makes a difference. Where do you fall in that regard?
Generally speaking, I fall with Boog in the sense that I don't believe there's enough statistical evidence to suggest that, as a rule, lineup protection works or generally is a thing. But I will say this, in talking to a bunch of former players and in learning and in observing plenty of anecdotal examples, I think it is most definitely a thing, most definitely a real thing for certain players and certain lineups. So, which is to say, there are a lot of things that don't have statistical backing as a universal rule. But if you ask Mike Trout, for example, what it's like hitting in a lineup with Anthony Rendon hitting behind him, I guarantee you what he would say is, at least off the record, I'm much more comfortable than I was a year ago because I know for sure I'm going to see more pitches in the zone. I know for sure that if I get on base, I have a better chance to be driven in. And so I think for certain superstar players and in certain examples, it is most definitely the case. As a Phillies fan, I saw this for years with Ryan Howard. When the Phillies had a reliable five hitter, in this case, like Jason Worth, for example, Ryan Howard would mash. When they didn't, Ryan Howard would get pitched around. That's just a natural thing. So I don't think as a rule it works, but for certain superstars and for certain power hitters, I do think that having a legitimate stud hitting behind you does make a difference, even if it's not supported statistically the way that some, like me, would like.
So you've got numbers that show that offense around the league is catching up.
Yeah, but it was only 2 weeks ago, Buster, that I was reading pieces about how suppressed offense was around the majors. And at that point, we were trending towards the lowest batting average in a season ever. But as is often the case, hitters have caught up over the last 10 calendar days, Buster. That includes 114 total games. The league is batting 262, 335, 455. That's good for a 790 OPS. And the most significant jump, curiously, has come against premium velocity. The league-wide slugging percentage against 96-plus, Buster, has increased by 118 percentage points during that time.
And you and I talked last year about conversations I had with coaches saying, yeah, the hitters are adjusting. They're hitting high fastballs better than ever. And it was interesting because two Sundays ago, we had Shane Bieber on Sunday Night Baseball. And he's someone who throws to the – he's very old school. He throws low and away more than any pitcher in baseball. You know, it's a very old Atlanta Braves pitching style approach. Low and away, low and away, low and away. And what jumped out at me is what an outlier a pitcher like that is in this day and age.
Almost everyone now likes to elevate and spin the baseball above the barrel. And we've learned that that works, but we've also learned, and we are currently learning, is that these hitters are really good too and that they can adjust. I watched Kenta Maeda yesterday throw eight innings without allowing a hit, dancing at the bottom of the zone using his movement and using his pitch mix. Eventually, these guys can hit 100 on the pitching machine, and some of these relievers, that's all they're offering. So I'm with you, Buster. Throughout the course of this season, I think pitchers with three legitimate pitches, like Shane Bieber, like Kenta Maeda, are going to probably rise to the top as hitters begin to continue to adjust.
All right, what do you got on the Chicago Cubs, who are off to a good start?
Yeah, but they surprisingly own the second-best record in the National League, thanks in part to the best infield defense, Buster, in the sport. Chicago is converting an astonishing 82% of ground balls into outs. That's the highest rate in the league and on pace for an even higher mark than their historically good 2016 team. So what's behind their success? Well, simply the shift. Under first-year manager David Ross, the Cubs have nearly tripled their shift frequency from last season when they ranked dead last. So that pitching staff, which ranks 23rd in strikeout rank, ranks 7th in run prevention.
Wow. Those numbers absolutely jump out at me. Before you go, what do you think about the whole swing on 3-0 thing?
Buster, you know me. You don't swing 3-0 up 7 runs in the 7th inning. But look, I will say this. It creates good conversation. The push and pull between the old school and the new school in baseball is a charming thing. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think the conversation that it creates is a good thing. And the fact that people like Fernando Tatis Jr. are sort of trying to steal the soul of the game away from these old curmudgeons like myself is an objectively good thing. And I'm willing to admit that. But myself, like, I didn't swing 3-0 anyway. Certainly not in that situation. And if you see the reaction from Manny Machado on the on-deck circle when Tatis puts that ball out, I think his facial expression says it all. His facial expression told me, I'm going to wear one next at bat, and he almost did.
I'm going to change your moniker to the youngest old-school person in America.
Well, sir, there's no consistent line of thinking with anything that I think. I just think whatever I do. So maybe I'm a wild partier, as Greeny says, but I for sure like the unwritten rules.
Thanks, Hembo.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. And real quick, shout out to Keith Hernandez. Fun fact, my brother-in-law, his middle name is Keith, because my other brother-in-law was allowed to select his middle name, his favorite player, Keith Hernandez. So shout out to Scott and Brad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. My mother-in-law was like, oh yeah, you can name your, you could give your younger brother his middle name. And he's like, Keith Hernandez. That's who I love. And that's who I want to bestow his name upon. So,
man.
Yeah. Kind of weird, but fun. Here's a fun one from PK Steinberg. He writes in fantasy time. What former player would you like to have seen play for a different team? Like Ken Griffey Jr. as a Yankee, even though we know he would, that's not something he never would have done. What do you think, Buster?
I you know, would have loved to have seen if, in fact, a trade that was actually agreed upon between the Red Sox and the Yankees had gone through, and that was Ted Williams for Joe DiMaggio. I don't know if you know the story, Taylor. You know, the two leaders of their respective teams had some drinks, and they had a few more drinks, and then reportedly they agreed to this trade. And then the next day, they called it off. But to see Joe DiMaggio, the right-handed hitter, hitting in Fenway Park with a green monster, and then Ted Williams going into Yankee Stadium in the house that Ruth built with that short right field, that would have been interesting. It would have been a complete wipeout trade for the Yankees because Ted Williams was more productive in the years that followed. But that would have been an interesting trade.
Absolutely. Don Irvine writes in at Don Irvine. He wrote this in a while back, and I've been saving it. And he says, with a 60 game or less season and an 18 playoff, at what point will teams start falling out of contention? And I've been wondering the same. How much longer until we can officially start striking teams off from the playoff race? We got to be getting close here.
Well, and Don, you know, what's interesting about that is that we're coming up to the trade deadline. So teams are beginning to make the assessments about whether or not they're going to be buyers or sellers. And it's a lot more difficult when you got 16 teams that might make the playoffs. They're going to be, I think, relative to most years, very few sellers at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm. Last one for today. John Buell at JBuell19 writes in, with another big game, can Tim Anderson be considered a realistic MVP candidate?
Yeah, hitting close to 400, off to a good start. Now, because he was out for a time, he's got one WAR so far this season. The American League leader, I looked this up, Brandon Lau, is at 1.7. So in terms of pure production, he's probably behind a little bit. But if he stays on the field the rest of the way, absolutely.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Keep them coming in. And please subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks a lot.
That's it for today. My thanks to Boog, to Hembo, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.